And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is Bill W., but it's a lot to live up to. And he wanted to make sure that we used his last name. And we did post as Bill Walker. So please welcome Bill. He's been around for quite some time.
I'm Bill Walker, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm not Bill W. So tell that because, you know, early on in recovery, I was at a meeting, and I was sharing in the meeting, and there was a young girl across the room who kept looking at me, and she's smiling, and my heart's beating faster, and this and the other. And I said, God, she wants me, you know. I'm free. So she comes over during the Lord's Prayer. She's still looking. And she comes over afterwards and says, oh, I'm dying to meet you. I want you to know I read your book. I haven't been Bill W. since. Okay. Before I start this, I need to tell you guys something. I am fixing to tell you a part of my life that I'm real uncertain about. I've thought about it today off and on. I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, but I've thought about things that I have never told from the podium. And I thought that's what I'm going to tell. Because I need to. It's I'm doing this for me, not for you. And so I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy that you guys are here. My sobriety date is 8/1/74, and I picked up a white chip in the little room next door there, and started my time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have not, since that date, I have not had a drink or a mood altering drug since. I was just finished. I can tell you that my drinking, you know, took such a pattern that, you know, nobody would want to repeat where I was. I had spent the last couple of years drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking and drugging as well. And I realized that I was living life under the influence of one chemical or another all the time. And I had to do something about that. Unfortunately, I went to the VA to find out, to get answers for that, because I was a veteran, and I thought that was the thing to do. Well, the Veterans Administration tried their best to save me. They really did. But they did all the wrong things. They excused my behavior. They patted me on the back and told me it was okay. Because they thought that the behavioral problems I had was simply because of the time I had in combat. And maybe it was a reaction to all that stress and all. I had news for you. Then I was having stress when I was 14 years old and started drinking, you know. So when the first drink at 14, I knew then that this was something special, because I had that drink and something clicking inside of me, and I couldn't get enough. Now I remember that drunk more than any other drunks that I had in my life. It's something about that. I took that first drink and everything in me changed. I felt like I belonged. I felt like I was accepted. And that was where I needed to be. Now, unfortunately, during my drinking, I had a pattern of doing things that kept getting me in trouble. You know, I lost jobs. I lost a career in the military because of drinking. And I loved the military. I wanted to stay in the military. But because of drinking, I lost that. It was discharged. Got an honorable discharge, but anyway, that made it easy for me to get out. Everybody was kind of petting me and patting me on the back and telling me it was okay, you're going to be all right. We just need to get you some psych groups to go to. And I still got a resentment about psych groups, you know. So, any of you guys in psych groups, give it up. Give it up. I just continued to drink and to do. Well, finally I had to do something. And because my drunks took funny turns. Like one time I was coming out of downtown Atlanta about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was in an El Camino that was painted red, white, and blue, like an American flag. And I had a couple of gallons of paint in the front seat, one beige and one white. And just as I got to the 75 and 85 split, I flipped that thing. And I don't know, this guy behind me said it flipped 5 or 6 times. I cut a light pole that was there in the little aisle. There's still one there, but it's not quite like it used to be. I don't think they got it centered right after I cut it loose. The police got there. I was trying to get the light pole out of the street. The cop said, "What are you doing?" "And I got to set this light pole back up." Needless to say, he thought I was drunk. But another time, I'm coming out of downtown Atlanta. I was working in City Hall at night and for the mayor. And I had a dumpster back of me, and I used to carry a half-pint bottle inside my coat. You could carry it inside your jacket, nobody would notice it. I'd empty that, and I'd throw it in that dumpster. So one night, I said, "He got me. You got me." One night, I thought, I got to empty that dumpster. I've got all those bottles there in the back, and I got to take that out and empty it. So I took it outside, and the door locked behind me. I got outside, and the dumpster was gone. They picked the dumpster up and didn't have it. So I took that garbage bag full of empty bottles, and I threw them in the back seat of my car. About 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm coming out of a semi-blackout, and the police were trying to stop me. I was running. You got to get this. I'm in a Volkswagen. I'm trying to outrun the police in a Volkswagen. I'll give you an idea how drunk I was. So I'm going down back streets, and this bag turned over behind me, and all these empty bottles were rolling around up under my feet. I was trying to kick the bottles out of the way and driving. They finally got me stopped. And a cop come up there, and he shined a flashlight down in there. And he said, "My God," he's on the phone. I'm trying to say, "I didn't drink all these tonight." And he said, "This guy's trying to say that he got all these out of the mayor's office, you know, because I tell him I work in City Hall." So, took me and locked me up. That didn't work. And this time, I went to jail. And that was different for me. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when I went in jail, I knew I didn't belong there. That wasn't me. Every time I had these problems, you know, with my drinking, I felt shame. Now, I know you guys are very similar. You felt shame when you did this. Well, what do you do to bury the shame? You drink some more. And that's what I did repeatedly. So, you know, they wouldn't let me call anybody that night because they were tired of me getting out of trouble. And they took me down and booked me, and the lieutenant said, "Don't let that guy use the phone." And they didn't. They locked me up. So the next day, I got ready to do something to excuse my behavior. Now, I'm going to tell you something about me. I've always been able to take the things that I did and say that was not my intention. If you did the same thing, I would say bad behavior, you know. But for me, I didn't intend to do that. So it was always the intention that got me in trouble. So here I am again in trouble after many, many times of getting drunk and And now, you know, you get DUIs and they take your license and this, that, and the other. I don't know how many DUIs I had. I was somewhere around 12 or 14. And only by the grace of God, I didn't kill somebody because I didn't hit another car or this, that, and the other. I had a habit of running over light poles and side fences and this, that, and the other. Yeah. So you hit them too? Yeah. So, yeah, telephone poles. Whatever. But, you know, I said I got to do something. And so I went and checked myself in the VA. And this time, I knew I had to do something differently. I told them when I went in, I've got a drinking problem. I got to do something about drinking and drugs. That's my problem. And I'm sorry, I've got to throw in the drugs here. You know, you guys, because that's my story. I'm sorry. It wasn't just alcohol. It was anything that would change the way I felt. You know, anything that would give me relief from what was going on inside of me, and that's what I would do. If it was alcohol, it's fine. If it was crystal meth, that was fine. You know, anything that would take me out of where I was. So I checked myself in the VA, and I said, I've got to have some help. And they kept me there for a while, and I came to an early AA meeting here. I've forgotten something out of the week. You know, I've said it here before. It was on a Monday night. Somebody said, no, they didn't have that meeting on a Monday night. But I don't know. It was a long time ago. And but one night I picked up a white chip in that meeting. And that's been it for me as far as drinking and drugging ever since. Now, I know you're sitting there saying, well, you got sober in 74. Yep, I sure did. Didn't work the program, though. There was something different where I was concerned. I come to meetings and I hear you guys talk about staying sober and about God, and I say, I don't want any part of this. I had seen the results of your God. You know, seeing people killed in combat and this, and God forbid, there was a little girl in Florida. The alligators got in the backyard and killed this little girl. And I went off on that. I thought, well, you know, I was running around here saying, well, how could your God let that happen? So I didn't want to accept the God thing. Somebody told me the wrong thing. And I told some of the guys outside earlier tonight, when I hear somebody say it to a newcomer, I almost get mad because they told me all the wrong things. People said, if you don't believe in God, that's okay. This youth group is God. I got news for you. You ain't my answer. The answer you give me is find God. Well, guess what? You can't be my God if you're telling me that. Or either, oops. Walter, we're going to tell your story in a minute. I was just not ready to accept this. I'd come to meetings, but I wasn't doing anything else. You know, people talk about working the steps. I just ignored the steps. I'd come to meetings, and I would sit in meetings, and some of the old-timers here would say, what step you work it? I'd say, oh, third steps or whatever. I never touched the third step. I skipped over it because somebody had told me I didn't have to do that stuff. So I skipped over it and went on and baked my way through, but I didn't drink or use any drugs. And that worked for a period of time. It worked up until I had about 2 years in the program, a little over 2 years. Coming to NAVA and going to meetings and staying somewhat sober. But it was just that, just doing that, you know. And back then, I don't know, it didn't seem like they talked about God as much as they do now. But anyway, I'd get up and leave if they got too spiritual in the meeting. I'd have to leave because I couldn't stand here and hear that. That wasn't my answer. my answer was somebody to pat me on the back and tell me I was okay. And I got a lot of that, but it wasn't doing anything for what was inside of me. What was inside of me was that same fire that was burning, you know, before I took my first drink. And I don't know how I managed to get through all that without drinking again. I did everything else. At 2.5 years of the program, I wound up going back in the VA and told them I was threatening to think about killing myself, that I couldn't stand being in this body. And I couldn't stand doing whatever. I didn't have any answers. So they locked me up for a period of time, gave me everything they give you when you're psych, you know. And but that didn't work. It just didn't work for me. And they kept me 6 months, a little over 6 months. And the magic is I went to lunch with a guy who I saw in a meeting here not very long ago, Hal F. Some of you guys might know Hal. I went to lunch with Hal, and I was telling him, I don't believe in this God. And he said all the right things to me. I said, I don't understand God. I don't want any part of that. And he said, Bill, you don't have to understand God. All you got to do is realize this. God is infinite, and you have a finite mind. You're never going to understand God. So I could accept that and deal with that. And that's what I did for a long time. I just periodically did that. And somewhat worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you start out with the first step, and everybody can work that one. You know, obviously, you know, the time you get in AA, you're at the point of doing something about your drinking and drugging. Or you would be there. First step, second step, I just kind of ignored because it said the power of drinking itself. And somebody told me I could use the group for that. And you don't have to turn it over to God, just accept the power of the group. I jumped all over that one, you know. So I didn't do the second step then. So that leaves you at the third step. Well, guess what? You can't do that one either. So I go on and I do a four-step inventory. And I did do the four-step inventory half right. I did it out of the big book. And sat down and with a pad and pen and wrote down things like ego and resentment and this, that, and the other. So that did give me some answers. And then comes the magic. You know, I need to say something now about fourth step, fifth step. I hear a lot of you guys talking about four and five, and they don't go together. They're two separate steps. You know, so people are saying, well, I'm afraid of four and five. Well, you don't do four and five. You do four, and then you do five. And thank God I got that one real clear in the beginning. You know, so... you don't do the two together because one of them is a pattern of behavior that you have that you can use as you go on through the 12 steps. The other one, fifth step, is when you tell somebody, you know, all the little nasties that you swore you'd never tell anybody. And, you know, I've heard guys tell about robbing banks and shooting at people and this and the other. And they get through taking a fifth step with me, and I would say, you know, that's funny. Was it not any little nasties that go, oh, well, wait a minute. They're sitting back down. And I didn't know you were talking about those things. That's where I'd never tell anybody that. So that's kind of what I had to do with that. And I kept coming to meetings. But, you know, as I said, at 2.5 years, I totally wigged out. So they put me in the hospital. I'm locked up for 6.5 months. Had a major body infection. Don't know where that came from. Oops. And had a major body infection, and they kept me in VA and Emory shooting me up with whatever, you know, to kill the infection that I had. And that gave me some time to think and to pray. So then I got serious about working the 12 steps. And I picked a sponsor. There was a guy that I went to Rebos in the first year, and there was a guy there. I was shaking and couldn't hold a coffee cup still, this, that, and the other. And he said, "I'm your sponsor until you can get one." So for the first year, this guy would call me, and you guys, I sit here right now, well, I'll be your sponsor, but if you don't call me, I ain't going. This guy sponsored 8 or 9 of us, and he called us every day. "So where are you going to meetings now?" And he had a big book study meeting one night a week, and he would call on the phone and be sure we were going forever. And, you know, so for the first year, that was it. Then he left, moved out of town, and went to Kansas City. So I had to pick someone else to be my sponsor. Now, I had not really used anybody except this one guy for a year. And I went to him and I said, "Pierre, how do I pick somebody to be a sponsor? Because you just appointed yourself." And he said, "You pick somebody that's got something that you like and you want to be like that person." Where was this guy who came here? And I don't think there's anybody in here that knows Chuck. But there was a guy who came here. You may have known Chuck. But I'm sitting in the back row. I come in, and I sit back there where you guys are. You know, so that's an amen corner back there. Man, you don't know amen corner. So I sit on the back row, and wouldn't want to mingle. This guy would come in, "Hey, come here, come here." And he was all boisterous and happy and this, that, and the other. So I asked him to be my sponsor. So for 36 years, Chuck was my sponsor. He moved to Florida, and, you know, but it kept using him on the phone. And he died a couple of months ago. But up until he died, that was my sponsor, and I didn't use anybody else. And the magic was, I wish, and I could tell you that I got sober and everything fell in place for me. It didn't. You know, I'm running around in Alcoholics Anonymous, homeless, because I'm in a relationship that, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm bad about getting in relationships that end up with me being on the streets. You know, I'm at the point that what I got to do is go find a woman. I just meet one on the street, give her my car keys, my checkbook, all my money, and just get it over with in the beginning, you know. I showed up, I don't know how many times, at Chuck's and Pat's house with everything I owned in a brown paper bag. Never, never, ever did either of them say to me, "Bill, what's wrong with you? Why can't you get your life together?" I don't know. They gave me a place to stay. They said, "Come on in." And for a period of time, I would put it together. I'd be working, I'd be making money, and I wouldn't be drinking, I'd go into meetings. But I wasn't working the steps. I had no contact with this higher power you talk about. You know, I swore earlier, I was outside, and somebody mentioned Paul Eddy. And I swore I was going to tell my favorite Paul story. I'm going to stop right now and tell it. Paul, I went to a meeting one night, and Paul was telling this story about this guy who was looking for spiritual answers. And he heard that there was some guru in Poconoco or wherever who had the answers. So he traveled by boat, by train, walked across, and he could see this mountain in the past. little wisp of smoke going up. And he walked across the prairie. He got there and he climbed the mountain. Took him all day to climb the mountain. He gets up there, and there's a guy sitting there with a little fireplace, and he said, "Oh, great Swami." And he said, "Yes, my son." He said, "I understand that you have the answers to life." And the Swami said, "I do. Just don't drink and go to meetings." That was kind of where I was. That's what I was. I was looking for all that answer that they were giving me. And so finally I had to do something with that. I wish I could tell you that it worked for me. It didn't. I spent most of that time being depressed and suicidal. Bouncing in and out and up and down. Not going out. I didn't drink. I didn't drug. But what I did is find people in the program who I could one-on-one with, whatever, who would help me get through and prop me up and tell me I was okay and help me to get through. And that would work for a period of time. There's some people here tonight that I use that way. You know, there's a couple of people here that... that I've known forever, I think, in the program. And we traveled. We went to different places in the country and went to meetings all over the place and just nibbled a little bit with the program. I don't know, do you guys nibble at the program or do you work the program? I nibbled. And if you nibble, you don't get the whole thing. You know, you got to... You got to take a bite of this thing if you want to get it. So eventually, I've been subject to some major illnesses. And I think a lot of my major illnesses, including the trip at 2 years, 2.5 years, the trip that put me in the hospital then, are some of the major illnesses that I'm being treated for now are psychological. I think that my head creates that. Hey, you may not agree with that. I don't know. If you don't, that's fine. For me, I think some of mine is that. And I think my cancer, I think as a result of my psychological brain thing, my diabetes certainly is, you know. So those kind of things has kind of crippled me. But that's brought me to my knees, and that's put me in a place, finally put me in a place to where I said, I've got to do something about recovery. And I can't go into an AA meeting and go in there and tell people, you know, I'm not working the 12 steps. I haven't been working the 12 steps. I've just stayed dry. But guess what? That was the change. That was the change. The change was that before it was over, I wound up on my knees praying to this God that I didn't understand and that you guys wouldn't explain to me. You know, everybody kept saying they found God. I looked everywhere for this dude. You know, I looked everywhere. And had not found him. So I had to do something about getting in touch with that spiritual part of this program. And that's what has worked for me since. You know, the 12 steps are magic. If you work them, but you got to work them in the order that they're there. Well, I had skipped over some of the steps that dealt with God and higher power and this and the other. And that don't give you a full picture of the program. It don't give you the answers that you really need. The answers that you really need has got to be step 1, 2, 3, you know, and working the steps and getting in touch with the spiritual side of the program, which I wasn't doing. So a few years ago, I finally, started by, I've done the 12 steps many times, in the 37 years I've been here. 1 through 12 I've done many times. The last several I've done, I did them all. I didn't skip around and take the ones that I liked or I was comfortable with, but I did them the way they were intended. It makes a lot of difference if you do them the way they're intended. And, I promised my wife I would tell her. She didn't come tonight, and she was sick. And she was trying to get ready to come because she was wanting me to drive by myself. And I said, I don't know why you're so interested in going. You know my story better than anybody. Because I've been honest with her. I haven't been honest with all you guys. Tonight is my attempt to do that. You know, work-wise, you know, I've been up and down. I've been blessed, if you want to know the truth. Truly blessed. Work-wise, money-wise, this, that, and the other. I couldn't ask for anything better. I'm at the point in my life now that I know, you know, that this power is going to protect me, take care of me, and all I've got to do is be humble and ask for His help. And I do that by using... Are you snoring? Is he snoring? Okay. Go back to sleep, man. So, I don't blame you. I'd be asleep, too. So, we need John back in here. Did John leave? I guess he left. Oh, that's okay. He's here. So, are you his wife? No. Okay. Excuse me. I was supposed to ask you that. Is that your... That's not your wife, John. I need to check out which women are married and which women aren't. My wife would kill me. You know, so. That's been a pattern in my life. I found a lot of my serenity. And now the... meetings downstairs. So. Do what?
Now we know you're lying.
Now you know I'm lying. No, afraid not. That's... I've used many sidetracks in the 37 years I've been here, other than doing what I'm supposed to do. What are you supposed to do? Trust God? Clean the house? What else, Chris? What else, Chris?
Help others.
There you go. So, that's what it's been like. I told you earlier, I've had several major illnesses that's brought me to my disease. But I've got one now that is going to kill me. It's called old age. That one's going to kick my butt. So, one day at a time. Not today. Thank you, Wayne. Wayne's mother was real active in the Naranon program and Al-Anon, Alatine. Wasn't her and Charlotte the original Al-Anon?
No.
Yeah. Used to go do 12-step calls on Wayne, his brother, Mike, who's passed away now, and would go over and she would say, I know you boys are hungry, come on in, I'll make you a sandwich. Yeah. Lois Wayne never knew what a sandwich was in her life. She had a huge dining room table, and it would be spread out, you know, food from one end to the other. And she fed us that way. I made many, many friends here. I've made many close friends here. And I'm grateful for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I appreciate you guys being here tonight. And let me share with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny B.
Hey, thank you. Come back next week. We'll do it again.
Hey, man, that was great. Thank you.